Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Amanda Dobra Hope, and we'll be talking about her book, Holding Space, Supporting Others While Taking Care of Yourself First. Do you know what it means to hold space? Many people don't, though most people have done it at least a handful of times in their lives. Others may have a special talent for holding space, but don't even realize that's what they are doing since the term is not in popular use yet. This book first defines and clarifies what is meant by the term holding space and then takes the reader on a journey through the life of a space holder. The journey covers initial stirrings of awareness, spiritual considerations, and self-care, as well as holding space in relationships, business, dreams, and for the world at large. Amanda Dobra Hope is a doctor of holistic life coaching and evolutionary pioneer, and currently serves as a non-denominational minister, holistic life coach, writer, teacher, speaker, and wedding officiant. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.itsasyoulikeit.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Amanda to the show. Good day, Amanda.
Hello.
I'm happy.
Having me.
Thank you. I'm wondering if I'm holding space right now. No.
Of course you are. No, you are.
Okay. Well, you know, I was fascinated by, you know, the title of your book and the idea of holding space. So, I think we should probably start with, you know, defining for the listeners exactly what is meant by holding space.
Sure. And I think that will actually tie into your question of whether or not you're holding space right now. So the definition of holding space is to create a container of allowing whatever wants to organically be born out of that space. So you are absolutely holding space right now because you have created this show. You have, decided to book the show with me and get everything set up to have me on it. And so you've created that space, created that container. And what you're going to do, though, you probably have some already decided upon interview questions. I assume, from what I can tell from you already, that you're going to kind of let it take the path it needs to. And if new things come up, you know, we'll follow those, or people ask questions, and we'll allow the show to give the listener what they need out of it. And it may be different, you know, today than it is in another time I speak to a different audience and things like that. So you're absolutely holding space.
All right. Well, good. Well, then, guys, I've been a space holder for a while. And I love the idea of, you know, creating that container for, you know, to allow whatever to occur. Is being a space holder something that people consciously do, are some people
that's a good question.
Apt to do that? Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes and no. As I said in the book description, a lot of people have held space in their life and just not realized that that's what they were doing or that it had a name. But I want to start to answer that by explaining that you can be a space holder either in your personal life or you can also do it professionally. So when you do it personally, you can hold space for yourself. You can hold space for another person that you're close to, a friend or a relative or spouse or child. You can hold space for a situation. You can hold space for a dream, for an idea, Those are all ways that you would hold space individually and personally. Now, and I'll get to some of that in a second, but the professional ways are, you know, what you're doing here. When I do my holistic life coaching, what I'm doing is creating a container when the client comes in to allow whatever needs to come out of that session. So, you know, sort of already having that energetic intention and creating that energetic container that we're going to, you know, work with whatever is best for them. So that's where my questions get guided and things. You know, I might ask them an initial question when they come in, but I don't have a specific, you know, A, B, C, D, this is exactly what I'm going to get out of them today. Because mm-hmm. in a coaching session, what you want for them is those answers that are buried. And we can't get those answers that are buried if we already have an, you know, very detailed, exact, meticulous plan to getting them. We need to, you know, to create that container and, you know, have a little bit of loose structure around it. But if we're so laser detailed of what we think is right, we're never going to find that answer that's buried.
Yeah.
So, but then I don't know if you want me to get back to the personal ways to hold space.
Yeah. Why don't we go ahead and start with that? You know, I think, you know,
okay.
for most people, that's, you know, it's usually where the best place to start is, you know, start with me.
Yeah. So if you hold space for yourself, an easy example of that would be maybe, you know, someone is unhappy with how something's going in their life currently, and they want to try to figure out how to, you know, do something that more aligned with them, feels happier, more joyful. One of the things, again, it would kind of be like if someone came to me for a life coaching session, is they're holding space for themselves in maybe asking themselves some questions or sitting with themselves or journaling or meditating or, you know, just asking themselves, you know, what their yeses and nos are about certain things. And then just if they don't have the answer, if you know, sitting down for a session or two or whatever doesn't give them the answer that they need or make things clear to them as to why something feels out of alignment or doesn't feel good, they may need to do what I call putting something on the side burner, where it's not in the front of your consciousness where you're thinking about it constantly all day long. And it's not on the back burner where you've sort of forgotten about it. It's on that side burner, and that's where the ideas come to you when you're doing something unconscious, like taking a walk or taking a shower or doing the dishes, and all of a sudden you get your aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's not always how it happens, but that's sort of what it's like to put something on the side burner, is that it's in your consciousness, but it's not always stuck to the front of your face. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's how you would hold space for yourself. When you hold space for someone else, a real quick way to describe that is if you have a friend who's hurting or going through something, society's normal way of handling that is, you know, maybe let them vent about how, you know, horrible, you know, some person is to them or some job is to them or whatever. Take them out for ice cream or,
mm-hmm.
you know, find some other
mm-hmm.
way to kind of shove it down. Fix it, solve it, you know, whatever. Whereas holding space would be not attempting to fix or solve and just holding that energetic space for them to sort of work through it a bit on their own, maybe asking a question or two, but really letting them find their own answers and not try to, you know, A, make them comfortable immediately and take away that uncomfortableness, or B, you know, find their answers for them and say, here, do this. It'll be all better. So. Yeah.
Well, no, when it comes time to, you know, from the personal side, you know, to create, to hold that space and create that a vehicle, you know, for that, how would an individual get themselves in that mode? I mean, you know, because as you were talking, I mean, I when you're talking about like a vessel, you know, of space, you know, I mean, I actually pictured in my mind, you know, a huge cup, you know, where anything could happen. Is there, for the listeners, what would they do to create that space, or you know, to get that, to recognize that that space is there, and then hold it. You know what I'm saying? Is like, how do I get to the spot
of
holding space?
Are you asking the question of how you would do it for yourself, or how you would do it for another person?
For self first. For self first.
Okay. Well, it's an abstract concept, first of all. So,
right.
You know, our Western society is very heavily into the masculine energy. That doesn't mean male. It's masculine energy of doing and structure and plans and things.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas feminine energy are things like creating, being in that creative space, relationships, the abstract, many other things, but things like that. So the holding space is a feminine energy. It's an abstract thing. So there isn't an exact, when you have A, B, and C, you'll know that you're holding space. But
okay.
the best way to do it is to not force things. One of the first chapters in the book is allowing yourself to be uncomfortable, which
right.
is really, really important because, like I said, even in the example with holding space for someone else, it's the same thing with ourselves. Nobody wants to be uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good. We want to get rid of that as quick as we can. So we miss opportunities to grow, to learn about ourselves, to find out, you know, what our emotions might be showing us in that moment, and to gain some knowledge and wisdom from that. So if we try to just become comfortable however possible, either by stuffing it down or, you know, medicating it by whatever means, or just trying to forget about it, or, you know, acting out in some way, like I said, we're not gaining what we could get from it. So I guess a good way to begin holding space is to allow that uncomfortableness. You're beginning to create that, you know, container right there is by letting that happen. And for the listeners too, there's a great exercise in the book that kind of explains how to do that when you've got a lot of different intense emotions and things going on, especially if it's something you're afraid of or something you're angry with. The fear one, I have a little exercise I call fear sitting, where if you're really overcome by, you know, fear about something, you sit down somewhere safe where you can shut your eyes for a few minutes and you say, okay, whatever this emotion is that's overwhelming me right now that I want to get rid of because I can't function otherwise, you have 2 minutes. Go ahead and overwhelm me. Soak yourself into my being. And I'm just going to feel you because I know I'm safe right now. I know that I'm just feeling this emotion. And what ends up happening is it feels like you're sitting there for 2 years. It's really only 2 minutes. And if you can get through those 2 minutes, you don't have to time yourself. I mean, you'll kind of know when 2 minutes is up. But what happens is as you get to, like, you know, 30 seconds, minute one, you know, minute and 20, it starts to relax its hold on you because you're allowing it in that safe space. It starts to let up its need to grab your attention and want to curb everything you're trying to do or be.
Yeah.
So sometimes you need to just give those emotions some acknowledgement and let them be there in a safe space so that they can work themselves through. And that's, like I said, a good way to deal with that. How do you learn to be uncomfortable when all you want to do is run and scream, or, you know, it's so much in your face you can't do anything else? And so that's a good tool for that.
Okay. I like that exercise. That's great. And when you talked about allowing yourself to be uncomfortable, I have to laugh. One of my most uncomfortable radio shows that I did kind of early on was a friend who had a woman who had written a book about like being 29 and having, living with a hysterectomy. And I was like, and she came to me about doing a show about the book, and I was like, oh Lord, you know, this is like talk about out of my wheelhouse, you know, this is like
right.
Not even anywhere near it, and you know, and I was, I mean, it was completely, it was one of those things where I thought, well, you know, I mean, this is just, I mean, I could easily have said no, I mean, you know, and just said, well, this is. But my first thought was, well, you know, this is a fact of life for a lot of women, you know, and what she experiences is a fact of life for a lot of women, and I do have a lot of women listeners, and, you know, so anyway, it was one of those things where, and by the time that I got, and then, of course, preparing for the show, it was uncomfortable, you know, at the start of the show, it was uncomfortable, you know, but as the discussion went on, you know, very much like you said, you know, like in the timing of sitting with that emotion, it waned. That was very much the kind of how it worked for me. You know, I mean, by the time I was, you know, a third of the way through the show, it kind of started to ease up. You know, and as the show started to kind of wind down, I was completely comfortable. Even though I didn't know a thing, and it was, again, something that I had absolutely no knowledge about. I mean, it's not, you know, fear-based, but it was very much in that uncomfortable
right.
realm. So I can see exactly how that would work, allowing that feeling, first of all, allowing yourself to feel uncomfortable, and then, you know, experiencing emotion, not resisting, and kind of let it just flow through you.
Exactly. And, of course, that doesn't mean you always have to do the thing that's uncomfortable. In your case, you thought, you know what, I have a lot of female listeners. This is my friend. I'm going to work through my uncomfortableness and do this. You know, if it's something else that's, you know, making someone uncomfortable that is not in alignment with them and that's why they're uncomfortable, of course, that's a different thing. So I just wanted to give that little disclaimer. But in your case.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I'm glad that you did. So now, when it comes time to, you know, holding that space for others, it sounds like, you know, when you use the example of allowing, you know, the other person to vent or to kind of let out, you know, their particular emotions, and not, you know, kind of offer the advice or just allowing them to express themselves. I mean, it seems that for some people the instinct is going to be to try and provide advice or like you said, try and fix it. So
mm-hmm.
It seems that this would have to be a conscious effort if it's one's natural tendency to offer advice and try and fix things. It seems that then one would have to just be very aware and maybe hold back that tendency.
Well, I have really good news for your listeners on this. Number one, I don't believe that venting is ever a healthy thing. So what a person wants to do is if they're you know, their friend or whoever wants to vent, or, you know, advice to the person who may be the one wanting to vent, the first thing you need to do is hold space for yourself and work with those emotions and bring them down a little bit so that you are never venting to somebody else, because venting is just poison.
Right.
That's taking all those really toxic, very high-level, intense emotions and throwing them at someone else so that you're not uncomfortable, because it's uncomfortable for you to hold them. So venting is basically a way of not holding space for yourself and taking your uncomfortableness and throwing it at somebody else who's most of the time unsuspecting, and then all of a sudden feels terrible and doesn't know why. So, I don't advocate, you know, and the subtitle of the book, of course, is How to Support Others While Remembering to Take Care of Yourself First. So I don't advocate, you know, the space holder to allow somebody to vent in a way that, you know, is positive to them or so you'll want, you know, if you're the person, like I said, that needs to let some stuff out, you want to kind of try and do it with yourself as much as you can first, and then say, hey, I'm not sure I, you know, I'm seeing the forest for the trees here, I've tried to work through it a little bit, but you're in a whole different energy by that point, and you're just asking someone to like be there and so you can bounce some ideas off of them and things, you're not spewing at them. Course, disclaimer there too, again, an emergency situation is something different. But so when you're the space holder, you are listening to, and then, like I said, if you're in a situation then where that person's worked through some of it and they're just coming to you and saying, hey, I just want to bounce some things off of you, you're maybe you're asking more questions than you're offering advice. And kind of doing it like, you know, I would run a coaching session, but maybe not as, you know, therapeutically or professionally or trained as I might do it. But you know, you're letting them kind of work through things on their own, and you're asking questions here and there, and just letting them know that you're there. And sometimes when someone's really upset about something, they may just, I mean, I know we've all experienced this, where you just don't want someone to leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need them to do anything, because
right.
you have to sit with your own stuff, and they can't fix it for you, but it feels good to know that they're just there. And that they're supporting you energetically. They're not necessarily doing anything tangible, but they are, you know, intangibly, abstractly, and in feminine energy, supporting you and holding space for you just by offering their presence.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. And so when, if someone kind of doesn't, if they didn't have the understanding of working it through themselves, and they, let's say they do fall into that, the other person falls into the venting to you. Again, you know, you said the focus should be on the, like, someone venting to me. And so my focus then should be on holding my space while they're in that mode. And then while holding my space, just basically reflect back to them questions, kind of getting them to do less venting, to be less maybe caustic
again,
or toxic.
You can, but if it's a friend or a person who does this to you repeatedly, that is going to take a very big toll on you, so they need to learn to bring it down themselves first and deal with
okay.
it themselves first before they bring it to other people. You know, like I said, if it's an emergency, that's a different thing, because
right,
you know, you don't have
right.
time in an emergency to sit there and think about
mm-hmm.
it, but you know, I would say if it happens once and you kind of, you know, are holding that space for yourself and kind of giving yourself a little energetic bubble and doing what you can to diffuse the situation, then if it's someone you know well, you probably want to have a talk with them at some point and say,
right,
I want to
okay.
be here for you. You know, can we do this in a different energy?
right, right.
Because
right.
you can't handle that for too long, and you shouldn't have to, because that's, you know, when I do premarital counseling for couples, I always give the little mental picture of it's two people walking together side by side doing their own work, you know, on their personal growth work. It's not one person carrying somebody for a while and then swapping and the other, no, you carry me, and having somebody else do our own work all the time. It's doing as much of our own work, our own inner work as we can, and then having the other people support us for the parts we can't do. But we're responsible for the majority of our inner work. And then the support comes from, you know, having those people help us with the rest. But they're not a punching bag. They're not,
right.
you know, supposed to be everything for us, and we don't have to do our own work. Everyone needs to take sort of their own responsibility and then have that support from other people, and not expect, you know, people to do it for them.
Yeah, I understand that. By the way, I do want to let listeners know, if you would like to call in and ask Amanda any questions, shortly we'll be taking a break, and we would address those after the break. The number to call in is 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, just feel free to post a question there, and we'll get to that. So, Amanda, what role does intuition have in space holding?
Well, if you, you know, another chapter in the book is, and of course, the way I teach things to people and the way that I relate to people is never towards any one certain religion or certain spiritual path or anything. It's whatever
mm-hmm.
you believe in that is higher than you. So, you know, and even for some people, that's just their intuition. They don't give it even a,
right.
a higher spiritual name, but, or their gut or whatever it is. But tuning into that which is greater than you is going to help you understand where to do certain things, where not to do certain things. It's going to help you also understand, as a space holder, does this person need me to help them right now? You know, if you can check in with that intuition and say, okay, you know, this person's a little intense right now. Do they actually need me right now? Or, you know, is this something they need to work out on their own? Or maybe it's somebody else's thing to help them with. So checking in with that intuition, just it's a good GPS for life and can help you make a lot of decisions. So
okay.
And it takes away the guilt.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, one of the things that, you know, you talk about in your book, and it's actually in the title, you know, basically taking care of yourself first. Some people, feel guilty about that, like you said, guilt. I mean, some people find that is a selfish act, that it's, you know, not there for the other person or family or kids. So what would you say to those who have a negative view of taking care of yourself first?
I have three answers to that, and I love that question. I get it a lot, actually, because that's what, again, society was taught, was help everyone else before you help yourself, which, you know, doesn't work for the number one reason of, if anyone's ever been on an airplane, they've heard, you know, if the cabin loses pressure, make sure that you put on your own oxygen mask before you help the person next to you. And so the thing about that is, I always forget what the exact timing is, if it's 40 seconds or whatever it is, but that's all you have to put on your oxygen mask if that cabin loses pressure before you pass out. So what I always say is, if you've got somebody next to you who's your child, who's, you know, elderly, who's, you know, disabled or incapable of taking care of themselves for some reason, and they actually do rely upon you, and you go to put their oxygen mask on first and then you pass out, you know, they're alive, they're with it, you're not, what do they do then? So if they actually need you, you do have to take care of yourself first, or you have nothing to give them. Another little story I have is, and this is using my intuition, so it ties in well to your last question, but there's a homeless street paper that is sold around where I live, and I like to buy it, and there's certain corners that, you know, have certain vendors that are usually there and things like that, and you know, give them the amount of the paper, but most people tip on top of that. And so as I was working through these different things years ago and writing this book, I was at a time where I really didn't have a lot of money to play with, you know, as far as giving out extra things or even, you know, having to kind of struggle with what I was doing. So, but I drove up to this person and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, give them a few dollars for the paper. And, the voice in my head, which I, you know, call my spiritual team, and said, no, don't do that. And I said, but why? I'm a person who will buy a paper. You know, if I don't buy it, there are other people who look down upon this and don't buy these papers. I'm one of those people who will. I have to. And what I got back is, no, because you don't have a lot to give right now. And if you buy that person's paper for your $3 or $5 or whatever, there could be a person, you know, that pulls up next that has maybe $100 to give that person today, and you bought their paper, and they don't have that paper. And I thought,
that's an interesting perspective. I mean, that is,
So, you know, what I do now in different situations is ask, is this mine? Is this mine to do? And that's where intuition you can use, you know, to find out, is this mine? Is this somebody else's? Is this person's that they need to figure out? And that leads me into the third thing, which is another little story that many years ago, when I was in the beginnings of my awakenings and working with all this, and I, you know, was seeing a life coach, and I was one of those people who would jump in and save and solve and, you know, all of that. And she looked at me and said, do you realize that every time that you jump in to save somebody or solve their problem or fix it for them, you're actually taking away an opportunity that they have to learn a lesson, grow stronger, you know, and they have to wait for that next opportunity to come around them because you took it away from them. And I looked at her and I said, do you mean I'm not helping? And she said, no. And I said, well, that's not what I want to be doing.
Right.
So that's another thing. So for anyone who feels guilty, hopefully all those things can help that just a little bit. You know, the oxygen mask, the story with the street paper, and the part where if you jump in to, you know, save, solve, fix, you're actually taking away that person's opportunity to grow stronger, and they have to wait for another one to come around to be able to stand on their own feet.
Yeah.
So if you look at it through that perspective, it changes that.
Well, it does, you know, and in each of those cases, you know, society, we've been conditioned to react a particular way, you know, yet, which runs contrary, you know, to you know, maybe
right.
helping someone.
Well, we're just empowering people is what we're doing. Holding space is empowering people. Solving, saving, fixing is disempowering people and taking away their opportunity to, like I said, stand on their own 2 feet.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow, that's great. Well, we're halfway through the show, Amanda, so I want to take that quick break. And again, listeners, if you'd like to call in, 619-789-4359. And those listening live in the chat room, feel free to type in a question. And then when we come back, Amanda, I want to talk about often we hear people saying that they need space or people need their space. So I'd like to kind mm-hmm. of talk a little bit about that concept and how that, you know, kind of fits into the holding space, okay?
Sure.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Amanda Dobra Hope, and we're talking about her book, Holding Space, Supporting Others While Taking Care of Yourself First. And again, you can find out more about Amanda and her books and a lot more information by visiting her website, www.itsasyoulikeit.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Amanda.
I'm back too.
Okay, great. Alrighty. So, you know, we've heard the phrase "need your space." Someone needs their space. I need my space. So, mm-hmm. how does that fit in? Is that the same thing as holding space?
Well, when someone says they need their space, either they haven't been holding space for themselves previously or allowing themselves to really get to know themselves through some of the things I outline in the book, like, you know, journaling or meditating or just stillness or, you know, talking to a coach or just doing any sort of inner reflection, spiritual practice. And so when they get to that point of I need my space, it's usually, you know, they haven't paid enough attention to that. Everything else has kind of come in and crowded the space in their life, and they're about to blow. The other thing that someone might need their space for is if they're not saying it in a sort of angry, I need this right now or I'm going to scream kind of mm-hmm. energy. If they just say, I just need my space, you have to give it to them because there are things that they need to look into. When I was doing a lot of my spiritual work, I remember years ago, I told my family I was, you know, pretend I'm on a retreat really far away, only I'm still here because I need the space to do this, you know? when I wrote the book, I needed the space to write. And it doesn't mean I was ignoring, you know, the people around me or the other things in my life. It just means you had to sort of create that space. But as far as in a relationship, if someone, you know, were to say that they needed their space, you know, when they do, and when you allow them that space, when they come back, you know, or if they do come back, if they don't come back, first of all, then something was out of alignment in the first place, and, you know, probably good that someone allowed themselves the space to figure that out. So consider that a gift, even if it doesn't feel good. But, you know, when they do come back, hopefully they'll come back refreshed and you'll be able to relate better and take your relationship to a different level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like, you know, that aspect is really about the empowerment of the individual and allowing the individual to work things out themselves.
Right.
And, yeah. Okay.
The other thing that's important, though, is if you're dealing with someone close to you that you know you're going to come back to, you definitely want to treat that kindly and gently and, you know, really work with that other person to say, okay, this is what's going on. This is what I might need space for. How can we work with each other so that, you know, you feel okay throughout this process too, and it doesn't feel bad for you. You know that I don't need this forever. Let's talk about what your threshold is about how much space you can hold for me, because it does put pressure on the other person. When someone says, I need my space, it puts a lot of pressure on the other person to hold that space, because, you know, if it's a relationship or a family situation or something, you know, if one person kind of tags out for a while, that may require the other person to pick up more things. It may require the other person to just energetically hold more space. It might require that they're pushing on a lot of their buttons where they're not getting the, you know, attention or the things from the relationship that they're used to. And so that it puts a lot on that other person. And so when someone says, I need space in a, you know, situation like that, where they know that they're going to come back and they very much care for and respect that other person, they need to have a respectful conversation where both people get to leave the table happy with what they're asking for. And to keep that in mind as well.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, you know, because, you know, the idea of holding space for others, I mean, to me, like you say, there's an effort involved in that. And then, you know, while you're also holding space for yourself, I mean, if you have an excess of holding, you know, then, I mean, it just seems that, you know, there's, like, if I'm holding space for an individual, you maybe need some time to figure something out, say it's a partner, and you know, it goes on for an extended period of time, what's really happening is I'm kind of putting my life on hold, you know, while holding that space. And
well,
that's...
You're not necessarily putting your life on hold, but I'm really glad that you're mentioning this, because there are two major reasons why I wrote this book. One of them, and sometimes it comes to three reasons, but one of them was to define the terms so people understood what it was and where they were doing it and how they could do it, you know, better, and how they could learn to take care of themselves while they were doing it. The other thing is that I really, really wanted people to understand, again, with the very masculine, energy-heavy culture of do and, you know, you better be doing something or you're not, you know, what are you doing?
Not
you're not,
productive.
You know, being worthy or whatever. Being... And holding space, being an aspect of being, takes a lot of energy, and people don't understand that and they don't respect it. So that's another giant reason why I wrote this book, is because I wanted people to start respecting themselves and others for the energy it takes to hold space. Because, you know, I heard you starting to say, you know, it takes a lot of energy, and it does. It's not something that is recognized for that, though, and people will beat up on themselves and feel guilty of, well, I'm not doing anything. But that being is as important to life and actually has to be entered into first before the doing. And like, you know, that's a whole nother topic, but it's important and it takes a lot of energy. And quick story for me on that. There was one point where by my guidance and intuition from my higher power and spiritual team, I was guided to years ago, sit, not even meditate, but sit and stare at a wall for 2 months. And people are like, what? And I'm like, I took care of everything else I had to do. I took care of my son who was homeschooled. I took care of him. You know, I took care of the other things I needed to do. But any spare minute I had, I had to sit and stare at the wall. And I was a very A-type personality before this, and that was very, very difficult to just sit and be like that. It took a lot of energy. And so at one point somebody came, well, what are you doing sitting around eating bonbons all day? I said, oh, you have no idea what I'm doing or how hard it is. but that was my spiritual practice. That was what was going to lead me to all the things I was going to be doing next. And though it didn't look to the outside world like I was doing anything, that being was very important in building foundations for me. And it was actually really, really hard.
Interesting. Yeah, that's, you know, and again, you know, I mean, a couple of things with that. You know, first of all, you know, with being an A-type personality and then having to sit, I mean, that, you know, it seems that, you know, we are often confronted with challenges that kind of test our, not really test, but it really causes. They're good examples for us to expand our understanding of ourselves and of the world, you know, and you know, in that particular one, you know, for someone who is not an A-type personality, if they were to see you do that, it would be, you know, that's cool. I understand that, you know, no big deal. But again, you know, and I think, you know, from what we talked about earlier, before the break, you know, we really are in this to expand our understanding of ourselves and, you know, taking care of ourselves first, learning, you know, about ourselves, and then from that, then we can assist others.
Absolutely. Well, and I do so much work with the masculine and feminine energies, and again, like I said, it's a different topic and a different thing, but it's those energies that each of us have inside of us to make us whole. And so because I was so A-type personality at that time, that's a very masculine energy of do, do, do all the time. That's, like I said, what our Western culture very much, you know, teaches us we need to do. And anything that is opposite of that or being or stillness or creative is very much looked down upon or, you know, seen as not as worthy or whatever. So we need to you know, me doing that was, you know, sometimes I call that my spiritual detox, where I detoxed that overabundance of masculine energy and learned to, you know, bring back in the feminine and to honor it, to honor that other energy, because, you know, we got taught not to. So in order for me to help teach other people that you have to balance both those energies inside of you and to use the feminine energy of that being first, because we can't create anything from a doing energy, it first comes to us in a feminine energy, and then we lay the plans and make the structures and things like that to make it exist. But we have to start paying more attention to and honoring that feminine energy. So that's another real passion of mine, and why I needed to write this book also, is to get that to start to change and for people to not feel guilty for doing things like that, or not think, well, I'm not doing anything, I'm not being productive, but to instead learn to understand to honor that, and that's a very necessary part of life.
Yeah. Yeah. That was for me, that was a challenge. Not so much now. I mean, but you know, it was one of those cases. Like, one of my favorite things is to every morning take a little walk. I mean, take a nature walk. I mean, that's my exercise. I kind of commune with nature and take pictures and all that kind of thing. And, you know, when I started doing that, I mean, it was, you know, on days where there were days of light activity that were kind of, you know, on the agenda. And then it got to a point, there were times when my to-do list was quite heavy, you know, my to-do for the day, you know, was quite heavy. And, you know, when it came time to take that walk, it's like, well, you know, I really should be doing, you know, number one on my list. And you know, I had a fight with myself about that, you know, and now I don't have that fight anymore. I mean, now I recognize that it's like, that is my duty first, is to
That's right.
take that little space.
Otherwise, you end up like one of those people that goes, ah, I need my space, because you weren't giving it to yourself in the way that you needed to.
And I have on occasion had that. So I know that one well, personally.
I said, that's just unfortunately what we were all told and have ingrained in ourselves is that, oh, we have to be doing.
Right.
We have to be doing or we're not being productive. So, but it's just not correct. And it's unhealthy.
Exactly. Exactly.
For ourselves, the planet, everything.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in your book, you also have a chapter, I believe it is, called Holding the Space for Yourself and Others in Order to Affect Real Change. So can you talk about how holding space allows for that? Now, when you said real change, you're talking about something significant and permanent?
Well, yeah, and that can be personal. It can be, you know, helping shift the collective of the world. But, you know, if we jump in to save, solve, fix, we are putting a temporary Band-Aid on something that is not necessarily going to be a real change. It's going to solve it for a little bit, make it go away, make it not right in our face. But then that same issue, whatever it is that's deep down, is going to come back up again. It might have different details, you know, the problem or the person or the situation that's, you know, driving you crazy or whatever may be different, but it's going to be that same core issue. So until you can hold space for it and really, you know, work with yourself and do that personal growth work on what, you know, what's going on, you're not going to create any kind of lasting, sustainable change. I knew it started with an S. it'll be like, this is one of my little cute things, is that it's like taking a hat and putting it on. You can take the hat back off, or it can blow off your head, or, you know, any of those things. It's not within you. But when you're, you know, doing something that is really creating new foundations, new neural pathways, you know, you've really looked into what the core issue is and healed it and started to build on a new clean slate, but didn't just throw something back on there because you were uncomfortable with it being, you know, blank for a while, you're then integrating that change and it's becoming a part of you. And it's not like the hat. It's inside of you, and it's not a piece of clothing that you can just take on or off. So that would be the personally. And then as far as for the world, it's contrary, like you said, to the way that we've been taught to relate to ourselves and other people. We've been very much a blame culture, you know, victim culture, that this person did this, you know, that's the venting. Oh my God, I can't believe blah, blah, blah did this to me. And then people write it all over Facebook and get everybody else to say, I can't believe that either. How terrible that person, but bleep, 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 bleep. It doesn't help anybody or solve anything. So we need to shift from a taking from a blame culture to a taking responsibility for our stuff culture. And then we can relate to each other better and have better, healthier relationships. And like I said, that, you know, helps us on a personal level. It helps us with our personal relationships. It helps us with the extended relationships. It helps the planet. It helps all kinds of things. So.
Yeah, I agree. So now regarding dream, I noticed in your book you also kind of address the idea of people and their dreams, you know, both your dreams and the dreams of others, you know, their aspirations, dreams. I have found sometimes, every now and then, you know, when I'm talking with someone who is just, you know, so focused on the past, a lot of times I'll ask them what their dreams are, and I am shocked at how many times people just don't have an answer. I mean, you know, it's just like, huh? I came from another planet. You know, what are you talking about, dreams? So how would the idea of holding space fit into, number one, personally attaining your dreams, one's dreams, and then also with others, with their dreams?
Well, if it's a dream, it's probably something that, A, is very worthwhile for you to do, achieve, put energy towards, and, B, it's probably something that's not going to happen overnight. So holding space for your dreams is to keep that vision. There's a quote, I don't remember exactly who it is, that says, hold the vision, trust the process, where you always have that vision, and then, you know, the process might take a swirly path or an up and down or throw challenges in your way, and, you know, think of that as a hero's journey and hold that vision. So that's holding space for yourself, is even when there's the challenges or, you know, the doors that get shut or whatever. If that was your dream in the first place, it means something to you. So hold space for it and don't just discard it. And then with holding space for the dreams of other people, it's absolutely true and important to me that people understand that there's no reason to be jealous of other people and their dreams. If we support mm-hmm. other people and their dreams, we are supporting ourselves as well. If other people do well, we all do well. You know, it lifts us when we lift other people, and everyone has their own dreams and their own unique gifts to give. And so it is never a waste of your energy or going to take something away from you if you, you know, help hold space for someone else's dream. You know, just energetically, just that support of, they just know that you believe in what they're doing and believe in their dream, and that, you know, you're there with them as a cheerleader. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to do anything specific, but that you're not trying to pull them in the other direction. You're not being a naysayer. You're not jealous. You're not trying to knock them down. You know, you're not thinking that you won't get if they get, but you're treating their dreams as tenderly and as important as you treat your own.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I, you know, in the process of the entrepreneurial journey that I've taken, I've had several projects that I've done where I just thought it was a great, worthwhile, got me jazzed, you know, to accomplish, and had many, many a naysayer. And initially, you know, when I started down that path, I mean, I allowed those naysayers to affect my enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And you know, after a while, it became clear that I had to kind of, you know, divorce myself of that that view that they had, and continue on. And you know, and some of the naysayers was like, well, it won't succeed because a blah 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 blah, you know. And then, you know, and then in some cases, some of the things I've done, and I've done a lot, some of them have been successful, and that is great. Like this, doing the radio show, a lot of people said, you know, it's, what are you going to do? How are you going to make the money? What's this going to, you know, all of the, you know, the stuff, you know, surrounded it. Versus
right.
me, you know, wanting to bring on inspirational people, talk to inspirational people. You know, some said that it won't last a year. You know, you won't last a year with it. Well, you know, after 7 years, it's like, okay, you know, I'm doing, you know, but the thing with that is that, and you know, the ones who, I mean, some people just treat it like a zero-sum game. You know, if you win, you achieve your dream, then I lose. And it's
exactly.
Or if you achieve your dream, it means that, you know, I am less because I haven't achieved mine yet, which is, you know.
Right.
So, I mean, those kinds of things, you know, come into play. And it just seems real important to be able to, I guess, again, hold that space for yourself and recognize, you know, what it is that, you know, have that little vessel for your dreams to fill, for you to fulfill.
Well, the thing is that if you have that positive energy that you're putting forth towards, you know, your own dream, someone else's dream, that's positive energy you're putting in your bucket. And if you're, you know, poo-pooing all over everybody else's dreams, but you want yours to succeed, and you're, you know, angry and mad and feel like a victim because yours aren't succeeding and theirs are, you haven't put any good energy in your bucket. You know, you filled it with negative energy towards everybody else. And so how in the world can you expect to achieve your thing when there's no positive energy to manifest it with?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, where people don't understand. It's like, add that positive energy to other people, and you're adding positive energy to your own bucket. And, you know, timing and whatever are all factors in when each person's thing is gonna come through.
The thing that I found is that, you know, if you support someone else's dreams, you know, that what's going to end up happening is, like you say, you're going to kind of fill your bucket with that positive energy. But also there's it just seems that it's there's a force that kind of propels you, you know, towards success. You know, just the idea of being a part of someone else's success.
Yeah.
Then you start to integrate it into yourself.
Well, and again, it's just an old, ugly paradigm that we've had, is our society's been based on competition rather than cooperation. And really, cooperation is where we lift each other and everybody wins.
Yeah, exactly.
And well, that's absolutely possible. So.
Yeah. Well, Amanda, we're almost down to the end of the show, but there is one more question that I have for you, and it's regarding children. You know, obviously, you know, for parents out there, what are ways that parents can help children learn the idea about holding space?
I feel like children know a lot more than we give them credit for.
Okay.
First of all, we think we have to teach them everything. But as far as, you know, it's I think the adults doing their own thing towards sort of unlearning all the wrong ideas of, like I said, you know, culture based on competition, or, you know, help everybody else first and bleed yourself dry, or do everybody else's work for them but don't do yours, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The more we can retrain ourselves on those things, you know, we're modeling better things for our kids, and,
okay,
you know, they'll feel it.
That's
my
yeah.
short answer. Otherwise, it would be way longer, I guess. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Is there any? I mean, we've talked about a lot of topics. Do you have any final words for the listeners, or maybe any, you know, words of advice that you would like to give the listeners that maybe is something that we didn't cover already?
The only thing that's coming to me right now that I think people just need to know and need to hear is, be positive. You're enough. You're worthy. All the things that you're doing or being that feel aligned with you are correct and right if they feel in alignment. And just because you're getting, you know, back push or backlash from society or other people, it takes everybody being able to do this personal work on their insides and know that they're doing a good job, and that, you know, like you with the radio show, you know, just
okay,
keep on keeping on, and know that you're, you know, believing in yourself and doing the right thing is worthy.
Great. Well, thank you, Amanda, for your time. I've really enjoyed this. I was really looking forward to today's show and understanding holding space better, and I do have a better understanding now. And I think I'm going to be able to recognize more clearly when I'm doing it, and then also there are some really good tips for me that I'm going to include in when it comes to holding space for others. So I really want to thank you for your time.
Excellent. Thank you very much, and congratulations on your 7 years, and thank you for offering this show to people.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Amanda Dobra Hope. We've been talking about her book, Holding Space, Supporting Others While Taking Care of Yourself First. And again, you can find out all about Amanda and all that she has to offer by visiting her website, which is www.itsasyoulike.com. And again, there is a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.